Yeah, absolutely. Hey, also, it should also be noted on Atlanta specifically, they've had interest on Austin dating back to when the Lakers tried to trade for DeJounte Murray. Mm-hmm. And Atlanta's interest in Austin actually wound up holding up that deal. And you know, the two teams have spoken. I think it's somewhat different leadership, or it is just outright different leadership now in place there in Atlanta. But I'm just saying that, like, the two teams have been linked on Austin here for a while. So mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me if, like, there haven't been conversations already so far this summer on, like, hey, you know, what are you guys looking at? What are we looking at? Like, what, you know, figuring out. But that's the nice thing here is the Lakers fill out their organization is, and as they add more voices here and more backgrounds, is that you'll have just inherently more information to be able to work with, mm-hmm. what other teams are looking to do than the Lakers have had over the last however many years. Mm-hmm. And that's another bonus to the Dodgerfication of the Lakers. So we'll see how this all plays out. Okay. Last thing on Austin's number here. I do hope, like, it behooves the Lakers to sign Austin to a bigger number this year and then have that escalate down, in my opinion.
De-escalate.
Mm-hmm. So that it, A, the contract is kind of inherently more movable. This year, you're going above the cap to sign him anyway, so it doesn't necessarily hurt you so much to have him at a bigger number now than it does in the next few years. Mm-hmm. And so, like, just from a, you know, kind of manipulating all this stuff as best you can. Again, if they're open to doing business here, which I'm mm-hmm. sure if you say, like, hey, are you open to a $41 million contract this summer? Like, I think that would get their interest. Mm-hmm. And then have it de-escalate from there. We'll see what that looks like. Another touchy situation that the Lakers are trying to navigate or will have to navigate is this spot that they find themselves with LeBron. We got rumors over the week that apparently Steph has been in contact with LeBron about, you know, going up there and playing in the Bay. Mm-hmm. Eric Pincus also kind of wrote in his article about how the Lakers are kind of building out, and you've talked about this too, but they're building out their team as best they can. And then they'll go back to LeBron with, you know, to ask him what kind of interest he has in playing on whatever roster they wind up putting together. And Eric, in his kind of offseason predictions, actually predicted that LeBron would go up to the Bay on the
MLE,
the max, the MLE, right? The
2 years, $30 million.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I find that interesting, not surprising, but interesting. It's always going to be somewhat surprising to see, like, LeBron in a different uniform. Like, that'll be a weird moment if it does actually come to that. But Pete, you've been talking a lot about how people are kind of looking at this LeBron situation through the LeBron prism and not necessarily through the Lakers prism. This is the first kind of national media or big media confirmation of that analysis. So why don't you kind of run through that again? And again, like, as we hear that from Eric here, do you think that's the right approach?
It depends on who's available. That's the information that they're sort of comparing bringing LeBron back against, right? But the idea of them, like, moving on from LeBron this summer, like, I've said this on my show, but the first time I heard about the 2026 summer was in late 2023. And there was a person that was, I kind of wanted to just learn more about front offices and stuff. And there was a person that was helping me do that without giving away any information about anything. But it was just like, how we did that, like, I would draw out, they were like, okay, give me your 2-year plan for the team, right? And so that was one of those exercises. And I gave them whatever my half-cooked idea was, and they were like, are you considering Austin's extension in the summer of 2026 when we have everything off of the books? I'm like, oh, I guess I wasn't thinking that far ahead, you know? And so that, all of the ducks being sort of lined up to this, and then Luka, the acquisition of Luka, Anthony, it I think gave that more shape of, we are in an era change and it's going to be built around Luka. And so I think that's really going to be their approach to this offseason, and that's such just a different way of approaching LeBron in the first place, who used to be the center of the universe, that like
it's now, sort of an afterthought. Not-
yeah. And it's, like- it's sort of like the way that Pink has put it, I thought was accurate relative to my information, is just that LeBron is sort of a fallback plan from their perspective. Like if they ended up with LeBron as, you know, main cog on next year's team, I think that would be a result of them trying to explore other things and then not really liking them enough and then going back to LeBron. So how does LeBron feel about that? I, you know, interesting question, but yeah, that's how I think things stand.
So the LeBron, how does LeBron feel about that thing? It's interesting because right now, like I forget if I talked about it yesterday, the day before, or these, all these shows, you know, this, you do a daily show. They all kind of blend together. But right now, if the Lakers were to have a conversation with LeBron about a number, they would find themselves at a more awkward spot now than they will later in the offseason, because now they technically can offer LeBron more than Golden State, than Cleveland, than everybody else, right? They can offer, literally and objectively can offer LeBron more. They're the only team, frankly, that can offer LeBron a number that he would be comfortable with going into next season, right? Obviously, they don't want to. I think that's become abundantly clear that the Lakers don't want to offer LeBron a 50-some-odd million dollar, even 1 year deal. But they can. Now, if they were to figure out the rest of their offseason and they were to carry out their plans and go back to LeBron and say, this is all we can give you, that makes that conversation somewhat easier. Now, the risk there is that, like, all of these, you know, the Warriors would be able to basically go to him and be like, we can give you the most, we are interested in giving you the most we can actually give you. And in that sense, and just in raw salesperson standing, that's a lot more positive than like, yeah, we want to do all these other things. In order to do those things, you would have to be at this number. We don't necessarily see you at this number, but are you interested in being at that number? Rather than it's like, look, LeBron.
If I were LeBron, man, I'd be saying, you're so full of shit. Like, you right. knew exactly what number you could have offered me earlier. I don't think he's too smart for that. They're not going to be able to be like, oh, you know, sorry, this is all we've got to offer you. Like, motherfucker, you could have offered me that at the beginning of the offseason if that's what you thought. Like, they are showing him, like, they're not going to be able to sweet talk it on the other end of things. Like, for me, the thing I'm most interested in monitoring on all of this is, for one, like, to what degree he's the fallback plan, but also to what degree, like, they're interested in having him back at all, frankly. Like, I'm very curious to see what degree that it's like you're talking about trying to finesse it and at the end of the offseason being like, oh, LeBron, we really want you back, and it's kind of full of shit, right? But like, I'm interested to what degree they're like, actually, we'd like to build our own team and, you know, kind of move on. Like, Iztok wrote a great thing. Iztok Franco wrote a great thing about, like, you know, one of the premises was like, the Luke era probably doesn't really start until LeBron's gone. And it's not intended as a disrespect toward LeBron. I just think it's a basic team building thing. But yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that the Lakers would be able to, like, you know, sweet talk their way out of giving LeBron a contract that is way beyond what he would respect. I'm more talking about it from the advantage that Golden State and that Cleveland have, where they're like, this is the most that we can give you. If we could, we sure. would give you more. And that's an advantage that, like, the Lakers need to find their way around if they are interested in bringing LeBron back. And mm-hmm. and now look, like, that point that you made there at the end, that's something that I haven't really seen talked about.
Yeah, I've been telling
which you. Is like, I know you have, but I'm saying that, like, I haven't seen basically anybody say, should the Lakers want LeBron back? You know,
I'm not even arguing that. I don't even care about my opinion on this. It's
not you. I'm, like, saying they, yeah, like,
do
like,
the Lakers want LeBron back?
Do they want LeBron back? And I think that is something that, like, traditionally speaking, if you're building a basketball team, you want LeBron James on it, uh-huh. you know? And I think now I think there's a lot going on there in that relationship between LeBron and the Lakers. And I think there's obviously a lot going on there as far as the Lakers moving on into the Luka era, you know, and all these things. Like, there is just this entire conversation is just so insanely wrought. Like, there's just no way to have it that won't come off as slanted in one way or the other. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, if I say, like, because I think LeBron, if I were LeBron, I'd fucking retire. I would tell all these teams, like, no, you don't get my farewell tour on $15 million next year. Fuck you, people. I'm out. I've been recording my documentary anyway. I'm out of here, you know, just on principle. The Warriors could try to say, look, like, we really, really want. If I was LeBron and Cleveland came to me and said, hey, the most that we could possibly offer you is this, I'd be like, no, actually, we have a cap guy. Clutch has a cap guy. He says you guys could sign a trade Jared Allen and I could make more money for you guys. Am I worth that amount of money to you? You know, and depending on his response now, like, this is the unfortunate spot that LeBron finds himself here, where the league has kind of sort of moved on.
Yeah, and I don't think that they would say yes to that. Yeah.
Right. Like, Cleveland would just come back and say, well, this is awkward, you know, and that's why this entire situation is just so impossible to have while being true to all of the interested parties here. I do still say, and I keep on coming back to, I think the Lakers have a comfortably 3-year window with Luka playing at an MVP level. And anything beyond that, given the way that he's treated his body over the years and given everything that he puts on his body over the course of a season, I don't think he's going to age like LeBron aged. I don't think he's going to, like, I'm nervous about that. And if, like, we've already done the, we'll see, you know, what comes about at the end of this season. We've already kicked that can down the road on one of those prime seasons. And if on another one is like, well, we're trying to, you know, move off of the LeBron era and fully move into the Luka era. And are you, like, spiting your face by way of, or cutting off your nose to spite your face?
Spite your face.
Like, are you kicking off those plans too early for the sake of kicking off those plans, when in reality, the best basketball thing you could do is have LeBron James on your basketball team? And that's the part of it that I keep running into.
Yeah. For 1 year at a decent sized contract, but beyond a certain number, really that MLE type of number, like, it's probably not, right? Like, you probably can't replace him. I think that's one of the practical issues, is that if he's beyond a certain number. Now, again, though, that comes down to the point of if LeBron wants to take that type of money, but I think that's sort of where things will coalesce around.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he kind of sort of has to. Like,
we'll see. I make no predictions on that front. Like, I don't know how LeBron's going to move off of that. I just do know that the Lakers have been, like, looking forward to this summer for a long time.
Yeah. That begs the question, because we have a couple minutes before we get to the next Spurs series. That begs the question. What do you think about, like, hearing that they have been planning for this while LeBron has been as good as he's been for the last few years? That sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the year I disagreed with them on, I think they punted 23-24, and I think that they screwed up even during the season that much. But I think the 23-24 deadline, that team was starting to play really good basketball and could have used a boost. And that was really the only time, though, that they sort of punted that and had been looking toward that. But after that, obviously, that's sort of been in the mode. We've been in an era change. And that was even the point that I was making last summer, where I was like, no, we're not going to go after, like, a $30 million forward or something like that, or something that has long-term money or something like that, precisely because all the ducks had been lined up for this. And so I don't know how you would have gotten to a championship team, like, kind of with where they were without throwing everything in. And that was the calculation that they made, is that for first, they wanted assets for a superstar. keep that, and they got one in Luka, and then to be able to build around that superstar. Now, I think that that's validated somewhat by being able to acquire the first guy, but this is the summer. Like, this is like 70% of the work to me. I love that we got Luka, and I agree that the time is now, and it's really the next 3 years, but it's this summer that's going to determine so much of the next 3 years, and I think that's part of the LeBron calculation. Is it's not just next season's team, it's the year after that and the year after that.
So my one, not even counter necessarily, because it's not like you're sitting here arguing on behalf of the Lakers here.
Yeah, I'm just conveying a perspective. Yeah.
My issue with this whole like lining everything up for this summer thing is, if that is what you're doing, then you need to accumulate more assets than they have to this point, because they have what, 3 first round picks, and that's including if they draft somebody and trade the rights to that guy on draft day. Like, they haven't done, this is what like the Warriors ran into, but on the opposite end of the spectrum with the two line timeline, right? Or the two timeline thing, where they were, you know, when you have a Steph Curry on your team and he's still playing at the level that he's playing at, and you have an eye towards the future, you were not serving either of those things. And I think while you have a LeBron James on your team, and I think the person who really kind of let the Lakers and LeBron down through all of this is actually Anthony Davis. Like, I love AD. I'm always going like peak AD on the Lakers, one of my favorite players of all time. But I don't think he took his conditioning as seriously as he needed to. And I thought that really, and his shooting and all of that stuff fell off a cliff to such a point that like it, if the Lakers sat here and say, I don't know that we can build around a guy who can't shoot but wants to play the four, like I can kind of sort of understand where they arrive at that conclusion. But still, if you're putting your ducks in a row, or if you're lining up your ducks for this summer, I would have preferred that they do more to even if it's like second round pick acquisition, you know, spinning off. You know, they've had expiring contracts that they've just let expire. Well, could you have traded that player and his expiring contract to a team that was contending for a second round pick that year while you weren't going for it?
While we were trying to make the playoffs and be as good as we could be. Like that's the point about the Lakers can't tank comes into play. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, yeah, we could probably traded Austin a couple of years ago for a couple of firsts to load up for this summer, right? Or, you know what I'm saying? Traded good players for not much in return, but we would have been screaming bloody murder at the time.
Well, so I'm glad that you made this point, because this whole like Lakers can't tank thing, that's just a commitment issue. Like, this whole notion that the Lakers can't, they did tank. We watched them tank. That's how they got Anthony Davis. That's how they won the 2019-2020 championship. Now, maybe the people specifically who've been running these Lakers can't tank because they got those jobs by firing Jim Buss for tanking. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe that's the
were tanking in the mid teams? I think we were just bad. We signed Timofey Mozgov and Luol Deng to fucking massive amounts of money. We had a bunch of 19-year-olds on the team, like, and Kobe dragging his leg around on a max contract. The team just stunk. I don't think they were. I mean, I think it was a functional tank for sure, but I don't.
Yeah, like, I don't know. What was the low called it? A stealth tank, right?
I think we were just bad.
But yes. I don't think you employ Byron Scott to win basketball games. Like,
behind the times, man. We were. You remember where things were?
Like, at the time. It might just be that the people who were running the Lakers were inept, and we got to benefit from, you know, long-term from that ineptitude, which, you know, altogether possible. Mitch Kupchak wasn't that inept, though.
He wasn't, but that was Jim Buss's. Like, Jim Buss was the dude that was in charge of that. Like, Mitch obviously had a little more pull because he'd been the GM, but that was Jim Buss's baby, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. My thing is, it's so funny. Last night in that movie last night, my number one criticism of the He-Man movie was that, like, if you're going to be quirky and funny and you're going to wink to the audience and you're going to do all those things, then you better commit. And remember in the old cartoon, they had that wizard, the faceless wizard, was it Orko? And Orko doesn't appear at all over the main plot of the movie. He doesn't show up until like the very, very end, the post-credit scene where he like says the spoiler alert, everybody, but he just gives like the lesson of the movie, right? Remember how they used to in like the 80s and the cartoons?
Oh yeah, the moral of the story at the end of
G.I. Yeah, the moral of the story, yeah. And Orko Bait, like he did, and it's like, guys, if you're gonna, if because they did such a good job of being funny and being quirky, and it was so light and stuff, and yet they stopped right there. And it's like, if you're gonna be as quirky as you want to be, and you want to really push the envelope with how weird a movie can get, then go all the freaking way and give me Orko, you know. And like I think here with the Lakers, if you want to be like you can be whatever audience or whatever organization you sell the fan base on. And if you basically say, hey, this is what we have to do, you know, in order to build for this, whatever this is. And if you sell it to the fan base part of this is actually like Rob Pelinka doing interviews at a time where he hasn't just traded for Luka Doncic.
Hold on. Like, if I can interrupt, you have to sell it to LeBron. You can't take LeBron on the team.
Well, but like they did. They didn't compete. They didn't compete either.